Let's get corrupted. What is going on, everybody? It's your boy Joe with Meteoric Serpents coming back at you for another episode of the Klubert Corruption Podcast. Guys, welcome to 2025. Happy New Year. Hope everyone had a great holiday season. I just hope you guys all enjoyed. I took a couple weeks off in December. Obviously, we're not doing that. We wanted to kick things off right. Have a real nice start to 2025, and as you guys probably saw by the thumbnail, I wanted to start off with a bang and bring our homie Alvaro back from Clover's Reptiles. He was episode number three on the podcast originally, so it's been a while since he's been here. That means it's been a little over a year. I really want to know what's going on in his collection. I've always said I absolutely respect what Alvaro's built over the last couple years. So all of that's super cool. I just want to hear things from his perspective, see how things are going and all that. But let's get through this intro stuff first. I hope you guys like the new thumbnail style. It's 2025. I thought the new year called for a little bit of change. Change the font here on the graphics as well. Hope you guys like that. Try to keep things up and fresh and updated and all that good stuff. Guys, and as usual, I am looking like a floating head because the background's black, my shirt's black, but it's the Meteoric Serpents t-shirt, and you could get that by hitting me up. You could also get the Let's Get Corrupted t-shirts. I have those on hand, let me know. Guys, if you're watching this, if you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much. Thank you to all the subscribers. I hope you guys listen to my little end of the year solo episode. You guys know how much I appreciate all the viewers. If you're here for the first time or you're here again, make sure you hit that subscribe button here on YouTube. Make sure you hit that like button today. Let's say what's up to everyone. Good to see you all here. And you could also listen to this podcast on all the major audio platforms. If you are listening on YouTube and you want to show me support, get the algorithm out to other people, go leave a 5-star review on those like Apple, Spotify, places like that, YouTube Music. Leave a 5-star review if and where you can. Write something too. That helps out as well. You could follow me at Meteoric Serpents pretty much on all major social media platforms. You can find this podcast by searching Klubert Corruption pretty much anywhere on Google. You can find all my accounts by typing in Meteoric Serpents and all that good stuff. Guys, make sure you support USARC, USARC Florida. Those are the organizations that fight for our rights to keep our reptiles. Whether it's a business for you, whether this is a hobby, whether you have one snake or whether you have 100 snakes, they're fighting for our rights to keep our reptiles, because you never know what's going on in your current location. And even things that aren't going on in your location, it could affect things countrywide. So let's make sure we are supporting those organizations. I sure do. I support both of them. And the like lowest membership tiers are quite cheap. So join the fight for sure. First link in the description below goes to the Meteoric Serpents Patreon. Guys, if you're interested in joining a community of cool people who enjoy colubrids, that's a good place to be. The Meteoric Serpents Patreon. We have a cool Discord group chat. Plus, it's another way if you want to say thank you for the show. It's a way to support me. And then besides that, if you just want to do a little one-time thanks, you could always do a super chat here on YouTube. Though at that point, I'd recommend you just join the Patreon and have fun with it in a group chat with other people. We are also, Klubert Corruption is brought to you guys by Show Me Reptiles, Show Me Reptiles Show and the Show Me Marketplace. Whether you go to reptile shows, doesn't matter where you are across the country, they do shows everywhere. Plus Show Me Reptiles is the organization that throws Klubert Fest, or, Mickey is the one who helped all the logistics get put together, and they're working on it for 2025, just like locking the dates in. I know that's been picked for the Fort Wayne place, so I'm excited for that next year. But yeah, support those who support the Klubert hobby. Check out your nearest Show Me Reptile show, whether you're a vendor or an attendee. Also, you can check out the Show Me Marketplace which is another way for you to buy and sell your reptiles. And if you are a vendor and you want to sell on the Show Me Marketplace, you could use code corruption-50. That is on the screen right there for you. I believe I put it in the description as well, so you could go ahead and see that if you're not watching the screen. It's the word corruption, then a dash, then 50, like 50, no spaces. So go check that out. You will get half off for 1 year as a seller on the Show Me Marketplace. Sorry if I didn't say that. But yeah, so go ahead and try that out and let me know what you think of it. Also, before we say what's up to the chat, let's see our hashtag Colubrid Corruption of the Week. This is an older photo. See, this is from a few months ago, but it's from former guest of the show, Phil of Wellington Exotics. Check out his, oh boy, I'm going to mess this up. It's the blue garter snake. I forget exactly which species it is. But yeah, dope setup. Phil always has good setups. I really like this enclosure that it's in. But yeah, look, it's just kind of chilling out on the perch. So go follow Phil on Instagram at Wellington Exotics 1 and check it out. Go listen to his episode that he did on here for the newly corrupted segment. That was fun. I want to do more of those. I need to find people who are getting newly corrupted. I want to have more guests on the show like that. I thought that was fun. See what, you know, newer keepers are excited about. All right, but before we bring our guest out, let's say what's up to the chat real quick. We got Eric's Morph Factory, my dog, what's going on? Hope you're doing well. We got Emilio, the V-Unit mob boss, what's going on? We got Krista from Neurofy Exotics, thanks for being here, Krista. Adam from Ivory Colubrid Co., one of the Patreon members. Yes, Texas rats are supreme. Adam already knows. I hope you're enjoying yours, your pair from me. We got Mike from Solid Serpents in the chat. Is anyone going to Pomona? I know Emilio is. I'm not sure about anyone else, but yeah. And let's see. We have Snugster in the chat. What's going on? Thanks for being here. All right, but without further ado, guys, let's bring out our guests. It's my friend, my good friend from real life. You know, it's not our first time talking, but it's my buddy Alvaro from Clover's Reptiles. What's up, man? How are you?
What's up? What's up, man? You know, it's good to be friends in IRL, you know?
No, it's, you know, it's weird. And I only say that because, you know, a lot of people I talk to on the podcast, it's like my first conversation with them. It's like, yeah, you know, I hit them up out of nowhere after never talking to them before. But you, I know you in real life. Like we've,
no, for sure.
You know, we're friends. So,
yeah.
But yeah. No, thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it. Good way to start 2025 off with you coming back on the show.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's a good start to the week. I mean, the year, the week and the year. You know, like you, I took a break from YouTube and social media. I just got back Friday from a 2-week vacation up north. So, you know, good thing to jump back right back into things with you.
Yeah, I'm sure that was fun little trip back home. I know you're from the Northeast like I am, so.
Yeah. Sure.
And at least it's winter time, so you get to kind of do that with your animals with cremation and stuff.
Yeah, man. I mentioned that in one of our chats. Like, you know, it's a blessing to have colubrids and especially hognose, because majority of the collection is in brumation still. You know, I still have 2 more weeks left, so it gives us a good break and be able to, you know, go away and not have to worry about, you know, feeding, watering, maintaining so many animals. It gives it a little bit easier time to get away. I don't know if I could get away for 2 weeks with having the full collection up and going. But yeah.
Gotcha.
Did we lose?
Okay. No, I'm here. Okay. Sorry.
Gotcha.
I had to fix my little backdrop here.
Gotcha.
That's always good. And yeah, you do brumation legit. You have the whole fridge. I've seen it in your room. So everything goes down. And now I know you've done it in the past. You put everything down, which includes even new hatchling holdbacks. The only thing you don't is really your stuff that's for sale still. Is that correct?
Yeah, man. It's wild this year. The fridge I have is like it's a pretty good size fridge. It's a two-door, one of those glass two-door fridges. And last year and even earlier this year, I go, man, I have plenty of space in there to grow over the next couple years, this and that. And I did a little something different this year because I had yearling, year and a half old males that I want to use this year that were up to age but need a little extra weight. So I kept them out an extra month and fed them an extra month. And then I put them away into brumation, like right before I was going on vacation, along with the yearlings as well. And with the yearlings, my 2023 holdbacks, all my breeders, it's time for another fridge already. So it's wild. I usually have grates and they sit on the grates. I had to pull everything out. Right. And it's just sitting directly on the floor fridge stacked up.
And because they're hogs, I think you use like the McCormick tubs with like the red top. So they're not super big tubs either. So if you're out of space, that means there's a lot of snakes in there.
There is, man. It's crazy. It's like, I don't know the exact number right now, but it's around probably 60 something in there right now. Nice. And you know, and that's including some babies and stuff like that. So, but majority is big females. I think this year I did use, for the males, I used a little bit bigger, tub. So it took up a little more space. I just wanted to give them a little more room. Even though in their brumation, they still move around.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Now obviously the brumation kind of leads us into the 2025 season, but I kind of want to go back and rewind, and I want to know how your 2024 was overall and how that was. And, you know, obviously it's been a little over a year since we last talked, on here at least. So I kind of want to go over what happened in the 2024 season for you. 'Cause that was officially year two, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So let's hear it. How did it go in comparison to year one? Because if I remember correctly, these facts, year one was like just over 100 babies off of eight females, like eight breeder females.
Yep.
So I want to know how that progressed. What was different now going into the second season?
Yeah. So it's interesting, man. I hatched about the same amount of babies, but I had 12 females breeding this year. Which it's, you know, pretty crazy to think, you know, add in a handful of other females still hatching the same amount of animals. You know, so there, that really leads us to like 2024 wasn't a bust, but probably could have been a little bit better. You know, I was expecting to probably do a couple more clutches, but for some reason, well, I know the reason now. Once I sat down and reviewed like my records and all that stuff, I didn't get any double clutches this year. Where the first year in 2023, the double clutches, you know, pushed me over the top with all those extra babies. And the biggest thing last year, man, it was, you know, 2023, I didn't have many shows because I just started breeding. So I didn't have any animals to carry over from the year prior and all that stuff. But 2024, you know, from January, I hit the ground running, doing shows nonstop, trying to do at least one show a month, maybe one or two months. I did two shows. So I was very busy. And I went to Dallas. I went to North Carolina, went to Houston, Texas, you know, and then a whole bunch of other stuff within the state. So my time was very divided. Even with the size of collection that I have, compared to some of the, you know, other people, it's not a huge collection, but being able to have to do all that stuff, the time was divided during breeding season. And I think what the major change was when, and I looked it up in my records, was I fed about maybe one or two feedings per, like between, actually more, I think like for every female, it's a handful of feedings that I didn't get in because either I was away to a show, traveling, or whatever it was. And I think that makes a big difference in the double clutching. So, you know, these didn't have the extra nutrition to be able to push those extra eggs.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And yeah, those extra few meals could really be make or break, especially when they need that calcium output to produce a whole nother clutch. Were you getting double clutches and they were slugs, or they simply didn't produce at all?
I didn't get not one double clutch, not even like slugs and stuff. Yeah, so it wasn't.
I'd say that's actually probably better on your end, that they didn't like waste themselves on a slug out or something.
Yes, yeah, for sure, man, for sure. You know, so it was eye opening. You know, I had friends that were telling us like, "Man, are you sure you want to travel during you know, breeding season and stuff like that?" You know, I don't travel during breeding season because I want to be here and be able to dial down everything correctly. This year, I mean, next week we got another show. So technically breeding season has to start, but, I might dial it down a little bit, maybe not travel out of state, but still do in-state shows.
Okay.
Instead of being away for 4 or 5 days, I'm away for 2 or 3, the max, if it's really far in North Florida, you know, and try to get that production up and stuff like that. But, you know, and then with the carryover from 2022, It still worked out because I had a good set of animals left over from 2022 that just added to the 100 plus babies that I hatched out this year.
Gotcha. Nice. Yeah. And then when it comes to your production this past year, what were some of the big hits? What was that animal that you wanted to hit that you may have hit, or what were the big results? The best results, I should say.
Yeah. So one of the biggest things is I sacrificed some visuals this year to make triple head stuff. You know, and the main reason I did that was because I'm going to say they're not available out there, but they had albino in it. And I didn't want albino in that type of a combo. So instead of having to pay, first of all, pay for an extra gene, or even put albino tank combo, I was like, you know, I'm just going to make heads. And I made a triple head, sable, Azantic, toffee bellies, which they're called Acid Rains, the visual. And, you know, they're pretty new. That combo, there's only maybe like a handful of people that have produced them and publicly shown them. That I know, to my knowledge, there's not many, you know, there's probably backdoor deals and stuff like that out of the public eye, but publicly, I haven't seen anybody sell them one on Morph Market and stuff. So that was one of my biggest things, was like, all right, sacrifice visuals this year from those two pairings, because I could have created toxicondas and then sables, Mai Tais and sable visuals with either of those parents. But I sacrificed the visuals just to make that stuff for my future breedings. So that was really good. And, you know, that's one of those things like, they're brown snakes, and triple visuals sometimes are a little hard to sell, right? But for me, to build a future project, I kept, I think, 6 females and 2 males out of that project. So when they're ready to go, I'll have plenty to run that project. The rest of the stuff I have, I think I got 15 babies. And one of those clutches that I was like, I was actually glad I didn't get a double clutch, because I don't want to have to off-sell that project as random things, or have to cut my price just to try to move them at the end of the year and stuff like that. So that was a little, you know, blessing in disguise that I didn't get double clutches out of those. I got just enough what I wanted for my project. And then, you know, got to hook up with some people. You know, a few shows ago, we were in Scales Expo. You know, you were there as well. And one lady stops by and she's like, I've been looking for this exact same combo for the last year and a half, and I haven't seen it yet, you know, and I got a good sale there. I'm happy I was able to also, you know, have something on my table that somebody's been searching for. So that was really cool. And then the next stuff that I think was really like, you know, what gets for me is what I want to keep for myself to future breed. Right. So the other stuff was I put extreme red albino into the snow project. So I got some, you know, that one, the female only laid 4 good eggs, and then slugged out. She retained the eggs, and by the time they laid it, they were all suffocated. So, you know, I got 4 eggs, and I got a 2.2. So I kept a 1.1, and I still have a female, but amazing. Those produce Arctic albino anacondas with extreme red lineage, purple line lineage, all 100% het for Azantic. Nice. And it came from the male was a super Arctic snow, purple line super Arctic snow to a purple line extreme red super conda albino female. Possible het snow. That's what I was really hoping to hit. But with the 4 eggs, we didn't have enough to really prove it out yet. So we'll see in the future. But I got some really cool babies, at least a 1.1 that I can keep. I still have a female available. You know, that's one of those projects. It's like if she starts growing a little bit bigger, nobody catches, you know, picks her up, she's going to stay here as another breeder, you know. So I think that, what else? And then one thing I did was I didn't produce as much high, like super high end animals this year, just because the year 2022, one of my best moors were like albino anacondas, Arctic albino anacondas.
Right.
That, you know, the shows that I was going to, the local shows and even the national shows around the country, a lot of people were buying those. So I geared myself towards that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. Just and I know,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I knew you told me that, earlier this year, that you were kind of going for a lot more pet stuff than necessarily higher end stuff for investors, just because, I mean, you know, pet people love hognose, and it's always good to have less expensive animals on your table, especially when you're doing shows and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, so, and it's helped me out a lot, man. You know, I have maybe 35 animals left from last year, so they've moved pretty well. Cool. You know, out of the 100 and something that hatched out. So I think I did a good decision. You know, we talk about the market and stuff like that between our you know, friends and our circle and stuff like that. And I think it worked out where the people that had the money to spend, and I tell people all the time, I'm still new in this. I'm very fresh still in this. Where to me, sometimes if somebody's going to spend $2,000, $4,000 or whatever on a hognose currently, and it's their last purchase of the year, or they're really budgeting, yeah, they might come to me. But realistically, I think a lot of those people are spending the money with the well-established 10-plus-year breeders that have, you know, a wide variety, a very large collection, and is able to produce multiple things at a time. So I think within what was going on this year with the economy and, you know, people not having the extra, I think, or not wanting to spend the extra cash on luxuries, because that's what I say. We have a luxury business here,
you know,
industry. It's not a necessity to live. I mean, for me, it is, because I love animals, right? By the end of the day, like, if the animals went to the tomorrow, I could still survive with what I need, the essentials of life. It worked out. Now this year, I am gearing towards more higher end projects. I'm gonna have more females, so I can still allocate some females to the pet stuff, you know, and produce some higher end stuff that's gonna come down the pipeline.
Nice. Yeah, and I do want to talk about what you're expecting for 2025. But before that, because it was one of the topics I wanted to hit on, because you mentioned it, like the market and the economy and all of that. Yeah. What have you seen in the overall hognose market? I'd say, like, you know, this year, especially compared to when you were getting in and you were buying a lot of animals. And I know you've still bought some animals over time here and there. You know, I know you made some purchases this year, but how has it compared? I'd say it's hard to like compare it to ball pythons, because I see a lot of ball pythons, but I feel like everything in general, it seems like a tougher sale. A lot of prices have generally gone down. So how has it looked in hognoses specifically?
Yeah, man, hognoses, I jumped into when hognoses were flying off the shelves. I remember you know, trying to get breeder stuff on Morph Market. If you looked at it and you didn't buy it and you went down the next day, it was gone, you know. And there's two things. I think the economy slowed down a little bit on people purchasing snakes or, you know, or animals in general. And then there is more breeders now. More people that had got in when I did are now starting to produce as well. Right. So the, you know, demand, right? It's still there, but the supply is larger. So there is a little more competition and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm still moving hognose. I'm still selling. I'm doing the shows. The shows have been a big, big help with selling, you know, our hognose. And then myself, you said it, you know, we talk in our groups and we share what we, you know, our new additions and stuff. And I'm still doubling down on the hognose. You know, yeah. I probably made my biggest investment. It was a done deal already, but I finished making the deal this year on one of the hognose and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm still in for it. I don't think the hognose aren't going anywhere. I just, to me, it's, yeah, there's still the sky's the limit still with hognose. So I don't see it slowing down particularly. I just see it's going to spread out more. That's really it.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And there's so many morphs and line bred stuff to play with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the hognose are just going to keep rolling. So definitely.
Yeah, man. And, you know, and I've had friends that been breeding for 10 plus years that this was their biggest years of production. So that seen from the background, I can also see the, like you said, like I mentioned, the amount of availability, it has definitely gone up.
Gotcha. Now, here's my question, and this kind of segues into talking about 2025. If you're seeing that supply go up and possibly the buying start to slow a little bit, does that make you not want to breed as many animals, or are you so project oriented that you want to breed because you're breeding for yourself as well?
Yeah. Same thing again this year. Yeah, man. I'm breeding for myself. You know, there's a handful of projects that I'm going to produce for myself. And even with the byproduct and, you know, and I say byproduct is just the stuff that I don't want to, you know, maybe I'm not going to keep, but still works with somebody else in their, either as a pet or in their breeding project. I'm not slowing down, man. You know, I'm going to breed just as many females this year and hopefully get double clutches and all that stuff.
Nice.
You know, and then again, right, gear up for the following year. It's just a nonstop circle. You know, I don't think this is a thing that people need to say, hold on, let me not say that, because different people are in different, you know, boats. But to me, it's not a year for me to say, wait, let me breed half my animals and wait and see. To me, I think I'll be, you know, shooting myself in the foot if I did that.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to produce, you know, even this year, I probably won't produce more than 300 hognose. You know, and if I do 300, that's a big number for me.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully maybe I hit around 200 and I'll be happy. You know, a handful of, you know, more clutches that's from compared to last year. And then again, they'll carry me over for the year. Because that's one of the things that I think where this year, another reason I have to slow down some shows is I have 35 hognose, you know, you know, between Morph Market and then other shows coming up. To me, it won't be worth it. Like, I could have gone to Pomona, right? But am I going to fly out there with 35 hognose, the expense and all that stuff to make a, you know, to possibly sell 10? Not having the high end stuff, because the stuff that I produced that was, you know, above $800, you know, a couple grand, did move already.
Okay.
You know, so to me, wasn't the best decision to go to Pomona. You know, maybe in the summer, maybe it'll be a different, or, you know, 2020 next year, stuff that'll be different, but we'll see what happens from then.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so 35 left overall. That, I mean, that's pretty good. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. You know, and big shout out to, you know, to Emilio and the view and stuff like that, because, you know, Emilio put me on to like the Repticons and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
you know, seeing him do that stuff and seeing our circle go to Repticons, like, okay, let me start doing them as well. Because then I was thinking about, oh, Morph Market is going to take care of me. You know, online sales are going to take care of
right.
me. And realistically, you need to hustle right now. You know?
Yeah.
You can't put your eggs in one basket right now.
That's for sure. Yeah. And it's great with what, you know, with the animals you have, because you have a little bit of something for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a little bit of the pet stuff. You have some middle tier stuff. You have I'll call them bougie pets, and then like semi investor, and then you have the investment animals mm-hmm. too. And I'm sure that kind of caters to anyone who might be looking for a hognose for whatever reason they might be looking.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, is most of us, I say 99% of the hobby in our industry started probably just as a pet, right? That's the beginning. And to me, to close off my animals to that part of the industry, again, I think is not a good move on my end, because as I'm growing, those people can grow with me as well and become very loyal customers. If I take care of and produce good animals for them, as I grow, their needs are going to grow as well. If they want to become breeders one day, or, you know, or just want to have some, like you said, some bougie pets and stuff like that.
Yeah. Nice. So, you talked about it already, like the reptile shows in the hognose market. How has that looked for you? How has that evolved over the last, you've been doing shows for a little over a year now. How has, I guess, that evolved? Because I know I feel like every show I go to, I see more and more hognose breeders. Yeah. I would say it depends on the show, but there's more and more of them. So how does it kind of fare for you in the midst of that competition and trying to sell animals, but also like putting your best foot forward, having the best animals on the table and stuff like that?
Yeah, man. One thing, like from starting to now, it's one thing I do get a lot at the, especially the local shows, is, wow, you have a large collection of hognose. You have a large, you know, availability of hognose that most people haven't seen. And, you know, lucky me, I'm one of the only, not the only, but I'm one of the few hognose breeders that has a variety to be able to put out there that's doing the local shows. That helps me out a lot.
Right.
There is competition out there. There's other vendors and stuff like that. But to me, I go mindset of, all right, I'm going to go sell my hognose. I know what I have. Try to give the people as much information I can about a hognose, give them good customer service. You know, one thing that I noticed towards the end of the year, and I've seen in the ball python, you know, vendors and stuff like that. But I did see people doing like fire sales on hognose. And to me, you know, I think about it and I do lose sales to those people and stuff like that. But it's part of the business, right? Business is business. People are going to do those sales and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's not sustainable. You know, it's the cost of tables, the cost of travel there, you know, feeding your animals, purchasing animals. If the only way you can do business is by sale, like running some crazy buy one, get one, 30% off, 50% off sales, there's no longevity there, you know. Don't get me wrong, I do make deals at shows and stuff like that. I do make deals because I'm also there to sell animals. And if I see somebody's interested and maybe they're $50 off the price that's on the tag, you know, I make a deal and make it work. And it's been something that starting at the beginning of the year and 2022 didn't happen much. But as the year went on this year, it seems like, you know, people were struggling and stuff like that. Myself, there was probably like 1 or 2 months that I didn't have one sale. Either I didn't have a show or there was no Morph Market sale, so I didn't have a sale.
Right.
But you can't panic. is part of it. And if somebody, I think, needs to run sales or some crazy, like, and that's not wrong with sales, right? But like some crazy, like buy one, get one, 50% off the whole table and stuff like that. I think they need to reevaluate on how they're running their animal collection, or if they have a business, their business. Again, there's no longevity in that. So, and another thing too, I do, man, it's, and you've seen it, I use Husbandry Pro, and a lot of people like the record keeping. A lot of people like the information that I can provide them. So sometimes that also helps a lot. It's a little more work on my end, but yeah, it's worth it at the end of the day to make the customer have a better experience and them get all the information that they, because usually you ask, what was the hatch date? When was the last time I ate? What are the parents' genetics and stuff like that? And with Husbandry Pro, I'm able to quickly send them the info on that.
Yeah. You know, man, I want to get into the Husbandry Pro so bad. And I did it. I was like on a good streak because I have it and I pay for it. And I got on a good streak for like a solid, I don't know, 3 weeks to a month where like I was marking water changes. I was marking feedings. I was doing the whole nine, and I had every animal inputted in there. I had my rack set up, so I had it organized. I knew where everything was. But man, I work full time. I was going to school still. I do a lot. I'm a busy person. It's so hard to do that organized record keeping. So I give props to the guys who do it. And I know you do this like full time now. So, but man, it's so difficult, and I want to like it, 'cause I like the features. I like what it does. I like being able to do what you said, you know, provide it to customers and stuff. But I find it so hard to be in that routine. 'Cause you know, if I'm cleaning and stuff and I'm feeding, like I just do it quickly. Boom, 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 boom. You know, I go around and that's it. Like I take my 20 to 30 minutes. I take care of it. And then I go do whatever else I got to do. So no, I do give you props for staying on top of that. And I know you're very organized and detail oriented, and you have all your shit down when it comes to that.
Yeah, man. It takes a good amount of time to get into the groove of things. There's definitely days that I'll feed, and maybe next morning I'll log it in and I'll backdate it to the day before. Just because in the middle of feeding, you know, busy schedule and stuff like that. And I'll write, it is crazy because it's almost counterproductive, right? But like I'll write myself a sticky note or something like that. And then like log in feeding, right? That's supposed to take that away. But in the middle of your schedule to come back into the system, and realistically, it's probably like 3 or 2 buttons, 5 minutes. But five minutes in the busy schedule sometimes adds up, right? Another thing too that I added this year was binder clips, small binder clips where I'll feed and stuff like that, and non-feeders or like drop feeders, I'll mark with the binder clips. So later on, either in the night when I have extra time, I'll sit down and I'll log non-feeders or whatever it is. It's always a evolving like way to manage it and try to remember everything.
Now here's a question for you. Were you going crazy and putting like prey size and all that stuff? Were you doing that whole nine, or were you just marking feed on everything? Like the bulk feed options.
I do the bulk feed option. But then I did enter all like my feeders. And then when I change the bulk, I'll bulk edit the size of feeder that they take. So when I go and feed, it just sets to default. Feed the rack, unclick what didn't feed, and those, you know, there's it says mark like unclicked or unselected ones, mark as refused feeding. So it does the feature already for. So that way I don't have to put in size, but I already have the feeder set in. And the bulk editing is really good once you figure it out.
Like I said, I had it down for a bit, and then I kind of lost my track on it. I was doing it more for myself than for anyone else at that point, just to see if I, you know, liked it.
You know what? And I even do it for my breeders. So for myself, and that what we were talking about earlier about why I didn't get double clutches. I reviewed my feedings from, I sat down and then went through the feedings from 2023 and this in 2024. And I saw, oh man, I missed a good amount of feedings.
Okay.
So that I was able to at least, you know, figure out, at least I think I figured out why. So this year, you know, again, make sure I, this year I'm going to make sure I add those extra feedings that I missed. And if I get good amount of production of double clutches, then I figured out that it was the feedings.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think I'll find my way back to it because I do like it. I like the system. It's the time thing, and I have to like put my head down and commit to it. That's cool. Let's see. One thing I wanted to ask you, what's big and new in the Hognose world? Like what's going on? Cause I guess I wouldn't say I keep tabs per se, besides seeing you and a couple other people, you know, just posting your stuff, but I don't know, what's big and new that's going on in the entirety of Hognoses?
Yeah, man. So, you know, genetics is always the big, you know, people want to know what's going on with genetics. In the Hognose world, so there hasn't been any new recessives or like incomplete dominant or dominant traits put out yet in the last like maybe last 5 years or so.
Okay.
There is people working, you know, projects here and there that are trying to prove things out that they still have under wraps, but they mention, hey, I'm working on something. So maybe this year or the following year, we'll see something pop up. We had that, you know, I think now with more people breeding Hognose, we're going to see a lot more different combos, you know, of different things. Cause even with the Hognose world, people fall into that trend of, damn, I really like that one combo. Let me start making it. Right. And I think we do need that so we can produce, because if you like it, other people probably like it. But we also need people to start thinking past that.
Further.
Further than that. Like triple visual stuff. You know, like triple visual recessive. Hognose just really started popping out last year. And we're probably going to see a lot more this year. So that's another big thing, you know. And maybe even some quad stuff this year with a couple of, you know, with the incomplete dominance thrown on top of it. So that's pretty cool to see that we're getting to those points where some breeders are regularly producing triple and quad visual animals. You know, and then there's always some genetic stuff that pops out here and there. It's like, oh, I have this weird thing going on, but I still gonna need to prove it out. One of the biggest things that I'm excited for, and you know, I had it on my podcast, Rare Genetics. And they're probably going to have, by the end of the year, they said they'll have five different recessive traits or five traits to be able to test for Hognose.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because I know that especially was being talked about leading up to Colubrid Fest. It was like, bring your sheds for Hognoses and corn snakes for RGI, because Dr. Ben was there with Kayla. I got to meet them and have a good conversation with them, so that was cool. But yeah, so I'm sure that's definitely exciting for you guys that they're jumping into that world. I know it was being talked about for a bit beforehand, but then now we're seeing it kind of come to fruition.
Yeah, man. They still need sheds, but yeah, as long as they have the sheds, they can map them this year, he says. You know,
so is that the deal? They're just openly asking for people to mail in like Hognose sheds. All right. So there you go. Anyone who's listening to this that has Hognose, do your part.
Yeah. Do your part. Yeah. And, they just posted on their Instagram, you know, over the weekend, the last couple of days, that they need sheds with the address and everything on their Instagram post. So just, you know, send the sheds in with as much information as you can about that, animal. Especially if Hognose, one of the biggest things that's, and we talked about it on when I had him onto my podcast, and was shed testing for the Arctic gene. Because the super, you know, that's an incomplete dominant. So the super form, yep, it's really easy to tell. But sometimes the single gene one, the Arctic, yeah, sometimes it's very difficult to tell. It's even subtle, just on,
right?
Yeah, it's sometimes very, very subtle. And that will help out so much in trying to, you know, properly identify the Arctic stuff. Because we've joked about, like, I'm only going to breed super Arctic stuff. So I know that,
yeah,
everything's Arctic, right?
Yeah.
But realistically, that's not going to, you know, you can't do that. You're not going to have a full collection of super Arctic stuff. So that's going to be, I think that should be like number one, what we call it, shed testing that should come out. So if you guys have Arctic, super Arctic animals and sheds, send them into RGI, because you're going to help it. And I, if you breed, you know what I'm talking about, the pain to try to identify some very subtle Arctics. Yeah. And then there's some that are really easy to identify. But if we can make sure that we get that the right genetics on these animals, it'll help all of us. You know, and I think there's both, you know, it's a double-edged sword, right? Sometimes, you know, it's going to push projects a lot faster if we have those, yep, genetic testing. But then as well, I'm one of those people that's like, I want to provide as much information I can to myself and my customers. So to me, it's going to be very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. You know, have you seen people who are producing Arctics kind of err on the side of caution when it comes to labeling their animals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I
like,
do it.
As POS or just not even saying it at all?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes, man, it's so subtle that, like, I couldn't even feel comfortable saying possible Arctic.
Okay.
You know, I always put the pairing, you know, so if somebody gets lucky and hits a super Arctic from that, you know, from the animal they get, then, you know, great on them.
Yeah.
But sometimes having that Arctic in an animal could be the deal breaker, you know.
Gotcha.
And having it or not having it. And if maybe I have one or two animals that somebody's looking for, like, Arctic lavenders are a big one, and Arctic and lavenders sometimes is really easy to tell, but majority of the times it's very difficult. So if I can test all my, you know, lavenders are possibly, you know, Arctic, it'll be a great help on that end.
Gotcha.
You know, and even to test some breeders that I have and stuff like that, like, right, man, I got it sold as Arctic. And now I've had two breedings, and it's like, I haven't produced any super Arctics. Do I just have bad luck on it, or, you know, or it's just, you know, or it's not Arctic. So even then, it'll be easier just to send in the shed for that.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. All right. Very cool. Yeah, that was one thing I definitely wanted to talk about. And just to go along with that, for people listening, I think they're looking for corn snakes as well. So
yeah,
corn snakes and hog noses, if you have sheds, send them in. If you want to know genetic testing, I know it's been a big help with ball pythons. I know there's been some controversies here and there, some tests that aren't as great, and some mess ups that have occurred, but yeah. I did some shed testing this year with ball pythons. I hit some really good odds, had some animals not prove the hets that I was testing. So, you know, it goes both ways. But shed testing is a really super cool technology. I know I'm not going to see it in some of the species I keep, probably, but for the common species, I think it's fantastic, and it's going to help projects push, you know, even better. So it's cool. So now let's talk about 2025. So where are you at with your collection when it comes to breeders this year? So you said you went up to 12 breeders last year, breeder females. Where are you at for year three?
So year three is not a big difference. I think I have 13 females this year. I have one female that I had to take off breeding, had really bad egg binding, had a infection in the ovary ducts and stuff like that, and just had a really rough time bouncing back. So Definitely not going to get Brett this year. Going to give her a full year of recovery and stuff like that. So I have about 13 females this year. And then with the biggest thing is the males that I have this year. I have a lot of double visual, you know, males that are coming online that are going to be a big booster for the projects that I've been working on to be able to produce more visuals and also do some, you know, other head stuff as well. So that's the biggest thing. It's the males are coming online this year. And then it's crazy because sometimes I feel like we second like rate males for breeding.
I was just gonna say that to you. Now you have these powerful males and they're gonna really power your season along.
Yeah, man. So that's the biggest thing. And now being able to see that, like generally I keep most of my holdbacks are females just because I want to be able to grow them back up and stuff like that. But this year I kept a handful of extra males just because I go, you know, I'll keep them. And then if I, for some reason, I really don't need them, I'll sell them off and you know, somebody will use them in the project.
Also nothing wrong with having backup males.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think that's another thing that happened last year too. I tried to stretch out two males, and they're older males, so they're only think good for one female. So this year I'm definitely not making that mistake. I decided to keep some stuff. And then I had some weird, you know, backtrack to 2024. I had a pairing that had albino in it that I didn't think that the male or female had in it. And it threw some stuff in there. There's one visual male that I really can't identify what it all has because it's thrown albino in it. So I decided to keep the whole clutch off of them.
Okay.
Off of that. And I'll go, I'll keep the whole clutch. Hopefully, you know, there's the testing and I'll test all of them and see if anything proves out to be like triple visual or, you know, or at least double visual and double head for other stuff. So that's you know, pretty cool to see. And then, you know, just finally seeing the babies that I hatched growing up this year to be able to breed the following year. So that's another very like exciting part of this year. It's seeing, you know, I have males that I'm using this year that I bred and I hatched out. So that's pretty cool to see as well. But finally get the females up to size and age.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really good accomplishment this year for the next following year.
Yeah. And how thin will you spread your males? Are most of your pairings like one-to-one? Are you putting one male to multiple females? What's your kind of take? I'm assuming it depends on the male.
Yeah, it depends on the male. But since this year, like I said, I have double visual males. I have backup males that are either like single visual het or double het males. This year, I'm going one-on-one and maybe throwing in a backup male that has the same either, you know, single visual, the het, or, you know, double het as a backup. But this year's no male is going to spread thin. He's going to have all the time with one female. The only male that is going to get used with more than one female is my visual Swiss chocolate male. Because that's a project that's, you know, very cutting edge. The Swiss chocolate is one of the, you know, recessive morph that came out. So I want to start, you know, I'm not going to get any visuals because the female is not ready. She'll be ready the following year, but I'll put him to, you know, visual females to get some heads and build up those projects.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's see. I was going to pull up your Instagram. Let's do that. Look a little bit of what happened this past year.
Yeah. My Instagram, there's a lot of shows. It's funny. I was watching. There's a lot of show posts.
I see that.
So that's the male. Is this the male? So that's, this is the clutch that I kept the whole clutch. I decided to keep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of those things that just looked weird. It was almost like, I think maybe the female might even be Arctic as well. So this year, actually, I'm going to put an Arctic male to her and see if I get super Arctics.
So yeah. Permafrost is a triple het. So it's actually a quad het.
Correct. Yep.
It was quad het to quad, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh shoot.
Yeah, man. So it's one of those like crazy crap shoots that happened. And so this, I decided, like I said, one of those projects that no sense in putting them out there. And for me at least, I could use every single animal out of this clutch. You know?
Right.
And it ended up being a smarter clutch. So that's another reason I decided to keep everything that I had.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Let's see.
So that
this one's a really nice one.
Yeah. So that's the extreme red stuff that I was talking about.
Okay.
So that's a, you know, purple line, extreme red, Arctic albino, anaconda, het, Azantic. And if I'm not wrong, I think that's the male that I decided to keep.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
yeah, that one's super, super nice.
Yeah. And if you know, people that are watching and know hog nose, without the extra line bred traits, usually Arctic albinos start yellowing out. So you know, having Arctic and having an albino within with that coloration is a plus. Yeah. So yeah, man. A lot
was
of
this show your books, so... Daytona booth. No. No,
that was American. Yeah, in gotcha. North Carolina. Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Oh yeah, I forgot to also mention that for the recap last year, we've ended you know, Daytona this year for the first years too. So that was, yeah, you know, one for the books. Being able to vend that show was a great you know, experience.
Yeah, definitely. What was your thought? I was looking for that. You posted mm-hmm. here.
Mm-hmm.
How did you like this one in North Carolina?
All-American. Yeah. And being honest, man, the show production, the organization was top tier.
Okay.
Now, the what's it called? The sales were a little low. A lot low, okay. I would say. Where, like, I know they're having one here in the next couple months. And I didn't sign up for that.
Okay.
Just because, you know, to me, to redo it in the summer again was a little, you know, not worth it. And that was the first time. So, you know, sometimes the first times are hit or miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So, you know, what I did hear from a lot of the, you know, patrons and stuff like that coming in was that this was the best show they've ever seen in this era. They've never seen anything like it. So okay, maybe building that anticipation, that, you know, really showing people what a good reptile show should look like, because the vendors yeah. were also really good top tier vendors. You know, 99% of them were, you know, vendors. If I had a show, I would want them to come to my show, you know.
Right.
So
yeah, and I honestly I thought the same about Scales, although Scales had a lot of people through the door, and I know a lot of people mm-hmm. did well there, but like I couldn't stop talking about it. And I didn't even, I don't think I sold a single animal at Scales, but mm-hmm. like I just thought it was a very well put together show. There were a ton of people through the door. I know other people did quite well, so yeah, yeah. I mean, I yeah. think these newer shows are kind of raising the bar for good reptile shows, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, man. Like, I did Scales 2023, and it was okay. It was the first show. I sold maybe
yeah
two or three animals. This year, I did a lot better. I did very well this show, so I was happy. Yep. Where, you know, I'm definitely going to do this year again, do the show. You know, West Palm, it's a good area, because it's not too far south, it's not too far north, so
yeah,
you get people from,
it's a good good middle point too.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. and the venue is, it's a good venue. There's really good parking, easy to get to, so that's a big plus there. Yeah.
Now on the topic, yeah, I think shows,
2020 was that
no go ahead, finish what you're gonna say.
You know, after seeing the Instagram, 2024 was definitely a big push for shows,
yeah,
for me, you know.
Yeah, no, I know you were grinding. I know you were busy. You were traveling a lot. So I'm glad that paid off for you, because I know you you did well at a good portion of them. So
yeah, man. Yeah. And that being said, it's, we talk about the successes, right? But there was two shows. Let me see. Two shows last year that didn't sell a single animal out.
Okay.
You know, but out of, let's say, 15 shows last year, we'll round up, or we'll average it out, about 15 shows, two shows not selling a single animal. It's part of it. You take the hit, you keep on going. So if anybody's going to go vend for their first time, you don't sell a single animal. Don't let it discourage you. It happens. You know, it's just, it wasn't your day. The right customer didn't walk through the door that day, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. What I was going to ask is, are you going to come to Colubrid Fest this year?
So here's the big problem with Colubrid Fest.
You told me why you couldn't this past year, right? Whose is it? It's your daughter.
My oldest daughter's
birthday.
Daughter's birthday. I tried to see, hey, do you want to go to a reptile show for your birthday? That was not happening. you know, so we'll see. We'll see the dates. I think if I'm not wrong, they fall around the same dates again.
They haven't officially announced the date, so I'm not sure. So we're going to see.
Okay. But, so yeah, I made a point to say, you know, hey, I can't go, guys. Just do it the next year. Just don't do it around the 27th of September. So, yeah, that's rough. Unless I get a pass, you know, from my wife and her, I would love to go to Colubrid Fest. I heard it was great time. You know, I watched the, what's it called, the replays of the presentations on on the Patreon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was really cool to be able to see, because that's what I really want to see, you know, that stuff there. And then also there's, you know, a good amount of people there to be able to just sit there and talk about reptiles and colubrids, you know.
You would have enjoyed it, like, genuinely. I remember we talked about it afterwards. I think I was texting you. I think I was voice texting you on the way home. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, I think you will too. So, yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully, guys, if you guys are listening, September 27th is a no-go.
we'll hope Clint listens to that exact soundbite.
All right. What you got?
No, so I wanted to talk about, so you added some new species this year.
Yes.
I want to talk about those, and I know you're very, very excited about them.
Yeah, man. Yeah. To set the record straight, hognose are still going to be the bread and butter of what we have. But I think adding new species, it's good. You know, and I talk about the business because I'm running a business with my reptiles and stuff like that. But it's good, first of all, for the person to have a new species, and it's good for the business to grow. You know, so I added a Barron's racer. So I have a pair of those right now. Those are going to be top of the list to add more this year, even before hognose, because I doubled down a lot on last year on hognose. Yeah. So this year, the big, you know, investments are going to be into Barron's racer. So I got a yearling already. Actually, she's almost going to be a 2 year old female. A green from a green and blue pairing. So got that. And then after getting her, I searched the internet for the right blue male. I know that I there was other blue males and stuff like that. So the right price, the right coloration of blue and stuff like that. And I finally got a blue male. It's about, I think in March it'll be a year old male. And I recently got it not long ago. And that thing, man, you know, I've seen the blues in person at Kevin Barron's place. And when I saw that, that's, you know, my decision was almost split between the Rhinos and the Barons. And when I saw the blue, it was an easy decision at that point. So it was really cool, you know, finally getting my hands on the blue. So big shout out to Brittany Gobbles Reptiles. She posted it. I messaged her and, you know, I put a deposit on it. Nice. You know, right price, right color and stuff like that. So that mail is, you know, going to be, it's a prized possession right now in the collection. And hopefully, you know, in the future, once the female's ready, he's ready, be able to produce greens and blues. Because if I'm not wrong, he came from a blue and green parent as well. Nice. One of the parents, I forgot exactly what, but one of those parents was a green that came from a blue and green. So it had blue lineage to a visual blue. So, you know, and he's a, you know, I haven't posted on like social media, but I sent, you know, the group chat. What's it called?
No, I saw it.
The Lupa Corruption podcast. And that thing is really cool to have in my collection. So we got those. Going to be adding more. I'm probably going to add some browns as well, and then more greens and blues this year. And then we added also Madagascar giant hawk nose. And those things, man, the barons are just visually they're stunning, you know. Yeah. The behavior, they're more of a flighty, more very like jotty animal that I'm not too used to. But the Madagascar giant hognose, they don't have morphs or, you know, different colorations. You know, there is variance in like the, you know, the standard coloring of like their yellows and their blacks and stuff like that. But their behavior, it's so cool to have. They're very confident animals. They come up. The male that I have, he's a little more reserved the female, and he loves to hood up all the time. And I've posted that on my stories on Instagram, and you know, he's about a year old now. He's a year old, I think. And he's probably close to 3 feet long. Not really wide, but once he gets his good size this year, one thing I thought about is like, I could just imagine him coming out his enclosure, like hooding up really big. So that's one really cool behavior that they have, just like the Westerns. But those get really big too. They're, you know, up to 6 feet long. So nice. It's going to be cool to have a nice big colubrid in the collection. The female is really nice. She has some really unique coloring. And whoever's watching and that has, Madagascar giant hognose has been looking to get them. Usually they have like this pink reddish coloration and they're from like their neck all the way to like maybe midway down their upper body. And as they age and shed, it starts almost yellowing out like a pastel yellow color. But the female a year and a half still has kept really bright reds. So that's really cool to see that, you know, she's keeping her color and hopefully maybe working that in the future, trying to, you know, produce line bred stuff that keeps more of the red belly than the yellow belly.
Yeah. And I got to ask you, Matt, because like you have this whole collection of hognose, like the Westerns, and then you add two new species this year. Like, how fun is it to learn and see a whole different range of behaviors from like two new species? And I'm sure they're totally different. And the Barons are like, I'd say completely opposite of hogs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause they're semi arboreal. So you gotta have to have that behavior addition.
Yeah.
Just like with the hognose, the Barons and the Madagascar giant hognose, I deep dive trying to find as much information, you know, talking to people that have them, and trying to just get it more information as I can, but have them in your hand, it definitely, there's been learning curves on how to feed, how to handle them, but just the excitement of having the new species and something different to, you know, break up the everyday routine. is very important. And I've thought to myself, I don't have an answer for myself, but is there going to be a cap of how many species I end up having? You know, because like just how I figured this out, like, okay, I really enjoy this species because it's something new and stuff like that. I got to keep realistic and I can't just be adding different species, handful of species every year. But, you know, same thing I did with the hognose, the plan with that is grow that species, you know, have, you know, 2 to 3 years of successful keeping, breeding, and then adding something else. Because that was the same situation with the hognose. I wanted to, you know, really dial it down, figure it out, the breeding process, the keeping, all that stuff, and then add. Because I think if you jump into too many species at once, you know, it's overwhelming. And that could be the downfall and, like, you know, burning out real fast, trying to figure everything out.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Though I have to say, like, experience is the best teacher. And if you're looking to get a new species and you've done your research, like, and you're just like, oh, I don't know if I should. It's like, dude, just pull the trigger and get it. Cause like, you're going to get to learn. You're going to get that hands on in. You're probably going to enjoy it more than you thought you would. So that's what I always, you know, recommend.
Yeah, man. And then those are other two species that batteries are becoming more popular now, but still. Very not, you know, you're not going to most shows and seeing Barron's races on people's tables, right? Even like, I think the only show that I saw Barron's racers on maybe 2 or 3 tables was Daytona. Other than that, all the shows that I did last year, no other show had them. But you know, Daytona is the colubrid, you know, like Tinley, right? When all the Calubri guys come out and show off what they have and sell their high end stuff and their most prized possessions. And the same thing, Madagascar giant hognose. What was it? I think somebody in Scales had one. A vendor had some Madagascar giant hognose. But then again, I don't see those many people on many people's tables. One cool thing that I saw recently. On a Madagascar giant hognose Facebook group, some guy, if I'm not wrong, in Belgium hatched out like an Atlantic looking one. So he called it Silver Surfer. And it looks really, really unique, really cool. Like, it has that Atlantic, you know, characteristics to it. So let's see what happens and if he can reproduce that stuff. Because, you know, imagine having a giant, you know, hognose, giant colubrid with morphs, you know, just similar to like the bull snakes and stuff like that, right?
Right.
Where I think once morphs start popping up, they become more popular pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, those are two species that I added last year and gonna keep adding this year. And see where it takes me from there. You know, there is another species that I want to add. It's not a colubrid that I want to add, and it's actually a lizard. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with those.
You want the monkey tail skinks, right?
The monkey tail skinks, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So that's another thing, too. Like, you know, here in Orlando, we have, you know, one of the bigger collections, that, you know, that's privately held and stuff like that. And I'm trying to talk myself into getting one this year. But same thing, they're not really, you know, from good breeders and stuff like that. They're not easy to pick up. And they do better in like trios and, you know, communal setups. So I want to be able to provide them that as well. So like, if I want to pick one up, I need to pick up at least 3.
right. No, you know? And I know you had that podcast episode with Matt from Sassabek, and you were talking pretty exclusively about those guys. I listened to a bit of that. That was good stuff. Matt's a good dude.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's really good. And those are another, I think that's going to be another, like, you know, whirlwind of behavior, learning behaviors, care and stuff like that, because they're they are communal animals. So, you know, yeah. we'll see where the year ends and what else I have. But one interesting fact, you know, we're talking about colubrid corruption, and all my species are colubrids. You know, actually, yeah. I'm gonna lie, but they're not mine. They're my daughters, my youngest daughters. We had to have a few Kenyan sand boas.
Okay.
But yeah. they're hers. And that's her little, like, you know, thing that she likes. But stuff that we're going to be, you know, definitely adding, you know, to the Clover's reptile umbrella, and eventually, you know, want to breed and stuff like that. It's major colubrids. It's
yeah,
it is. That's what just catches my eye, you know, and it's pretty cool to think about that.
Nice. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you. Everything I've got are colubrids minus the ball pythons. That's mm-hmm. that's my one exception to, like, the yeah. rule, I guess. Yeah. But yeah. And I kind of just mentioned it, but you also do a podcast. I know we've talked about it before. It's called the Scaled mm-hmm. Success Reptile mm-hmm. Podcast. It's on your regular YouTube channel, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's on my regular YouTube yeah. channel. So the Clover's Reptiles channel.
Yeah. And I have that linked in the YouTube description here. So, Alvaro, what I like about your show is that you don't necessarily have a topic, and you kind of do shows. It's like for you, it's like yeah. you have the shows that you want to have with the people you yeah. want to have. And I totally respect that. You're yeah. not really, like, of course you're catering to your audience, but, like, mm-hmm. you're doing the shows that you want to do. And I think that's great. And you're having on a lot of good guests, talking about a lot of good stuff. So I yeah. think that's really cool.
Yeah, man. You know, and not that I'm not trying to be, like, snobby or, you know, elitist or that, but I've been very particular on the people I bring on, especially after, like, the first, like, five that I ever did. And that's another reason, like you said, you know, like, I only do it twice a month. And then I bring on, you know, people that I wanted to, like, you know, like Matt Sasselback. I brought him on because I want to talk about monkey tail skinks. And he was a guy yeah. that, you know, would they be able to, you know, put out the information out there? And it's great because whenever I want to learn about monkey tail skinks, I go back to that and I rewatch yeah. it, you know? Yeah. So, like, anything that I wanted to know, I asked. So that's, you know, very interesting, very cool thing to be able to do these podcasts, is bringing on people and people that have species. And, you know, I didn't close it off to a specific species because
right.
I wanted to learn more about different species as well. And I think it's good to, and I do try to bring on, like, some obscure stuff,
yeah.
that I have on. I think I've only brought maybe like two or three ball python breeders on. And Emilio has been the only single ball python breeder that I've brought on that only does ball pythons.
Gotcha.
Everybody else has this and ball pythons, you know, some other yep, species yep. and stuff like that. So it's been interesting. You know, this year we're gonna maybe mix it up a little bit, bring on a little bit more ball python stuff, because I think I need to bring on more. I need to learn more about ball pythons, just because it's such a large part of our hobby, where to me, the more you know, the better you're off. So bring on that. And then
I totally agree. I think there's, like, people who are in other sectors of the hobby, like even colubrid people, it's like, mm-hmm. guys, there's so much, because, and granted, there's a lot of egos, there's a lot of BS in the ball python side of things, mm-hmm. but there's also a lot of knowledge and a lot of things to learn from what goes on with the genetics and things like that, and just understanding the animals that are being made and stuff like that. So there's a lot yeah. of, like, really cool stuff behind the stuff you hate to see. So yeah, it's fun to learn about. I feel like people should be more open, and you know, this has never been a shit on ball pythons podcast, because I have mm-hmm. the ball pythons right here, but, like, there's a lot of cool things in ball pythons that we just don't get in other species. So mm-hmm. I think you should appreciate what comes out of them, because it is very cool.
Yeah,
and there's no easier way to say that. You can't deny it. It's just cool.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it leads the industry year over year. You know, so you can't ignore it. But yeah, you know, and then I have the topics, like the more boring topics of like, you know, sometimes just talking about like the RGI thing. It was exciting to hear like, oh, they're going to have genetic testing. But sometimes just to hear 2 hours or hour and a half of just genetic talk for some people can be a little boring if you're not into that. You know, and you know, feeder people and stuff like that. But it's all part of our world, right? Like, if we didn't have feeders, we wouldn't be able to have these animals. So it's another thing I'm gonna bring on is I'm probably gonna bring on more newer keepers as well this year and mix it up a little bit. You know, some people that specifically hognose breeders that have been, you know, that I've been noticing as well, which is I'm not saying that I'm a, you know, older breeder or OG or stuff like that, but like people that maybe have popped up within the last year, like popped up in 2024 that I've, you know, started following and seeing. I'm probably gonna bring on sprinkle some in through the year and stuff like that. So
yeah, that's a little something of what I wanted to do, and you know, it's obviously not something new. I'm taking the ideas of a few different other podcasters, but I think it's a great idea of having newer people on. I did one once before the end of last year, and I'd like to do a few more of them this year for sure.
Yeah, man. I, you know, looking at things from a different lens is always a good, you know, good can be good. I'm not saying always, but it can be good. It can help us, you know, see different points of views of how to do certain things with our animals. So I think that's a big plus. And if I can help somebody, you know, push their, you know, their love for animals, why not? So, because I really appreciate all the help that all the support that I've gotten through the podcast and our YouTube channel and stuff like that. You know, so, you know, give it back now, you know, be able to support other people that are just starting off.
Yeah. And dude, your regular YouTube stuff, like you made a big splash in the hognose community from what you're doing on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, what's that been like? Because it's something that doing YouTube stuff is stuff I've struggled with. I have a hard time putting out videos and I have some reasons for it. And I want to get back on the horse this year for sure and put out more regular videos for people that that's one of my 2025 goals is put out more YouTube videos for people to enjoy and build a subscriber base that way in addition to the podcast. But what has that done for you? Cause I know you've had people literally come up to you and say, oh, I've seen you on YouTube before and stuff like that.
Man. So, man, you know, that brings a good topic. And I had this happen to me the last show of the year, Orlando last year. I mean, in December in Repticon, you know, and the YouTube thing is another thing that I was like, I'm not going to put a how-to videos out there because I'm new and I'm still learning myself. It was just, this is what I'm doing. This is how I'm doing it. Follow the journey thing, right?
Yeah.
I think that was one big thing where like once I started breeding and started figuring things out, it was easier to put out videos. There is weeks that I might slack and there's probably no video. You know, some new video, like for the holidays, you know, I I put everything to the side, took the
breather, and a lot of people did. So,
you know, and, you know, 2023 hitting back, having new ideas. Now that I have, you know, decent, you know, some experience with the hognose, you know, going to my third year of breeding. Now this year, you know, for people that are interested, keep a lookout because this year I am going to do the how-to videos. You know, and all that stuff. So I think that's going to be a big help because I do get the messages on social media, on Instagram. Hey man, I saw you this on the video. How do you do it? You know, and another big thing that, I'm going to be doing is, I'm going to be launching a Patreon as well.
Nice.
You know, to try to help as well, those, you know, how to stuff that maybe somebody wants to sit back and, you know, do a one-to-one. And I reached out to a good amount of my, like, you know, OG buddies that have been doing hognose and they're on board too. So I'm going to have some like special, you know, guest on the Patreon from like the OG guys. If people want to really nitpick Very their cool. brains and stuff like that. So there's new stuff 2025. Definitely gonna be putting stuff out there and growing it. And like the YouTube thing, hopefully, there's moments, man. Like, man, do I give up on it? Because the grind, man, it's a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't want to give up on it. Even if I just maybe cut down to twice a month also on videos, I just don't want to fully give up on it.
Were you doing consistent like once a week?
I was.
Okay. Yeah. See, I think I think depending on the person, I think that could be hard to commit to. I think for me, it's hard to commit to just because my collection's a little bit smaller. I'm not having as many clutches or babies mm-hmm. as you. So like there are things where I'm just like, oh, I can't do that. That's not for me. But there are things that I can make videos on and I could film, going through my collection and a day in the life of being a snake keeper and things like that. So, there's stuff out there to work on.
There is, man. And I think the journey part is so cool because I go and see the first video that I did.
Oh yeah.
And then now, and like just seeing the difference in, when I think the first video I did, I had, I think half of this rack right here. These are two racks stacked on top of each other. So I only had one. And now seeing this wall now and seeing what's next to me and how it's growing, it's pretty cool to see. Seeing the records of that. And then for people to be able to follow that as well is pretty cool as well, And then a lot of times I'll get the questions, especially about brumation. Sometimes there's a lot to explain every single step, what I do. So I'll just refer somebody. Just go take a look at my YouTube video. I have a playlist.
Yeah.
Some brumation and you can skip through and see what I'm doing and how I'm doing it.
No, and I'm sure that makes it way easier just sending a little YouTube link because you already
it does man it. Yeah. It does and we're in that era of free information, so why not put it out there? If I don't put it out there, somebody else will. And what I always tell people is also do your own research because there's multiple ways of doing the same thing and having the same success with it,
Definitely. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we get into some of my wrap up questions here? Anything else that I've forgotten about?
No, I pretty much covered it, the newer stuff that's going to come out down the YouTube, on social media, the Patreon, newer breedings this year. So like the most exciting I'm excited for this is just putting the Swiss chocolate stuff into my collection and breeding that. Cause that's, high top tier, high end stuff there and being able to grow that. So that's going to be really interesting. And then, if you guys are at a show locally and stop by, say hi and talk. And if I'm always open book, if you guys have any questions about hognose, hit me up and I'm willing to help. And if I don't know the particular answer, if I'm iffy about it, I can get you somebody that has a lot more experience than I do.
Yeah. And we're not quite done yet, but I have Alvaro's like social media links in the description, his Instagram, on YouTube, it's Clover's Reptiles. So go give him a subscribe, a follow and all that good stuff. But I have my last three wrap up questions. I don't remember if I had these when I first had you.
I don't think I did.
No. I don't think I did. Cause these like evolved and now I've kind of just kept these three last ones kind of consistent. So we're going to roll with it.
Let's hear it
on Alvaro's second episode. So what is a big motivator for what keeps you going with reptiles? You've done a lot over the last, 3 years now and built this collection, but what is it that keeps you like going and keeps that fire burning?
Happiness, man. This has definitely been an eye opener of maybe what I should have been doing a long time ago. Not the right moment, right place. But doing this has definitely brought a lot of happiness, a lot of you know, just happiness to what I do, my day-to-day life, and to my family's life. So it's opened up different point of view and different world to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know?
Yeah. And then I'm going to touch up. So I'm going to do, you know, how you did a sorry to interrupt your last question, but
you're good.
How you did your end of the year wrap up. I'm going to do one. The second week of January. So I'm going to do a wrap up of so the 14th of January. I'm going to do a wrap up, you know, and I'm going to bring up a topic on happiness and something that definitely happened in the Orlando Repticon, talking about people that coming up and talking about, hey, I saw you on YouTube and what you're seeing. So if you guys are interested in really going in deep into that, check it out.
Nice. There we go. So we talked a lot about the future. So I'm not going to say like, what does it necessarily hold for you? We talked plenty about that. Mm-hmm. But besides the monkey tail skinks, I need to know what the next colubrid on your want list is. So like, if you had a ranking order, you got your barons, you got your Madagascar giant hogs.
Yeah.
So what's the next one?
Man,
I know it, you said it's not going to be for some time.
Yeah.
But I want to know what it is at this current point.
And this is, I'm just going to go off with something that, you know, that just off looks and stuff like that really has caught my eyes, and is that bamboo rat snakes.
Okay.
So those, you know, those are really cool to keep, you know, just visually. So
yeah,
those will probably be in the collection one day.
Nice.
You know, anything that I really want to breed or that I really want to, like, you know, go hard onto, I couldn't give you the answer right now, man. I would definitely have to sit down and look. But it's definitely going to be a colubrid for sure. Okay. Yeah.
And now this one I think I had since like the OG of the podcast, but maybe it's an update to the answer, but what's your elevator pitch for someone who is getting a colubrid for the first, getting a snake for the first time, or they're coming from another sector in the hobby and they're looking for a colubrid species? What's your elevator pitch for hognose? Why hognose?
Yeah. Why hognose first? And I don't care. I'm a grown ass man. I'll tell you, they are the cutest snakes you'll have, you know? But I think the hognose, presence and the way they look, it's a good icebreaker for people that are teetering about getting a snake, or that might be a little bit like, well, I'm a little afraid of snakes, but hognose I can deal with. So that it's a big plus. And I do get a lot of customers because of that, you know, just the plain cuteness of hognose. But they are a smaller colubrid and a smaller species of snakes. So I think that's another big plus. You don't have to have such a large enclosure. You don't have to feed large prey. That means less cleanup. And, you know, the morphs are very, very distinct between each other. The combos are really cool. So that's what I tell people. It's like, you know, how many hot pink, you know, or like lavender color species of snakes do you see at shows and stuff like that? Because, and I compare it to shows because that's where most people see them in person, right? That's my biggest elevator pitch. And to me, it is a good starter snake if you get it well established. And that's what I always tell people to make sure it's well established, it has good feedings, the person can tell you where it came from and what was the breeding.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much again. It's been a great round. This was episode number 50. I always like the milestone with the tens. 50. We're halfway to 100. So thank you so much for coming back on. I appreciate your time. What do you have to say to everyone who is watching the show now and anyone who's going to watch or listen later?
Yeah. Thank you guys for watching or listening on, you know, thank you, Joe, for having me on again. Always good to have a good conversation with friends, and you know, make sure to follow us on all social media, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, all that stuff. And then if you guys have any questions about hognose or looking for one, hit us up. You know, we have a morph market as well. And, you know, we'll see you guys on the next one.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Thanks again. I'm going to run through the outro. If you want to hang out for a few minutes, feel free.
All right.
All right. All right, guys. What another great episode of the Kluber Corruption Podcast. Really enjoyed that. Like I, you know, said at the beginning, Alvaro and I are good friends. So, you know, this is just us shooting the shit and hanging out, which we've done plenty of. So, yeah, great episode. I really enjoy that. I like, even though I don't have Hognose, I really like hearing Alvaro talk about them because one, he's so passionate about them, and I like to learn. I like to learn about stuff that I don't necessarily know about. So it's fun to hear these things, even though the Hognose breeders have a combo name for every snake, and I'm never going to learn those. It's never going to happen. But yeah, great episode. Guys, as usual, make sure you hit that like and subscribe on today's podcast. We're getting those subscribers up. I really appreciate you guys. Like consistent few subscribers a week. Let's get those numbers up. Keep it going. Make sure to listen to this on all the major audio platforms. Leave a 5-star review if you can. Apple Music, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. First link in the description goes to the Meteoric Serpents Patreon. Come hang out if you want to support me. You know, it's an extra way to say thank you for the show. I just want to make the show bigger and better for you guys. So that helps me to do that. And come hang out. And yeah, and thank you again to Show Me Reptiles for sponsoring the show. But yeah, guys, this has been episode number 50 of the Kluber Corruption Podcast with Alvaro of Clover's Reptiles. Thank you so much again, everyone, and we'll see you on the next one. Peace.